Welcome back to the Jeff Porch Show at FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for staying with us on this Wednesday morning. Coming up in the next hour, Dick Brubaker, former state senator from Montgomery, and from SR Communications, Sean Ross. So make sure you stay tuned for that. But joining us now, I'm very pleased to bring on my next guest from the Alabama Policy Institute. Justin Boogie joins us. Justin, with a piece here, what to expect from four more years of Ivy. Justin, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Jeff. Doing well. Great to be with you.
Thanks for making time. So I always said this about the gubernatorial race. Look, no matter what you think of Kay Ivey or whatever, if you really want more of the last 4, 5, 6 years, if she gets a mandate, I mean, if she doesn't have a runoff opponent, if she wins by a big margin, then it's going to be a mandate, I think, and we deserve what we get. So you kind of lay that out, what you think that's going to look like, and I can't say that I disagree here. I think you're going to see more pseudo-Republican big governmentism. You still there, Justin? We may have lost. There we go.
Yep, I'm here.
Okay, yeah. So I was just kind of laying this out. What do you think the next 4 years are going to look like? Is it a mandate for more of what we've seen the last 6 years?
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right with your opening comments there. You know, she basically coasted to victory. She had, you know, several strong challengers, but in the end, they weren't able to get a whole lot of traction. And, you know, I think maybe if they had talked more about her record, really, and the issues instead of some of these kind of shiny objects that distract everybody, maybe they would have had more luck. But, you know, at this point, it doesn't really matter. There's almost no chance that she's going to lose in November. And so what are we going to see? You know, we saw the biggest expansion of state government in history over the last 3, 4 years. So I think we'll see that continue. We've got this gas tax that's in place now, this extra 10 cents. That's really, you know, at a time when gas is $4.30 a gallon, something like that, it's really hurting people. And with her remaining in office, you know, I think there's zero chance that that's going to be rolled back, that we would suspend the gas tax like other states are doing, like Florida and Georgia have done. And then, you know, kind of the big issue out there that, you know, we come back to it every time is gambling. What's going to happen with gambling? She said her biggest regret of the 2022 session was the gambling legislation didn't pass. So with her having this mandate, you know, I wouldn't be surprised at all if we see that issue come back very soon in a special session or first thing next year. So, you know, those are kind of her priorities. And since, you know, she's got this mandate now, I think we're going to continue to see those come back and maybe more so than ever.
I think you're spot on about gambling, and I think they're, I mean, she had a gambling commission, and they did the studies, that to me at least suggests she's open to the possibility of expanding gaming in Alabama, what that winds up being. It's not sure, and I always thought that, Justin, I always thought that the reason she was dragging her feet on this was to get the best deal possible for the state, whatever you think of gambling, and that would come probably after a primary, and I don't think she expected to do this as well as she did. But one thing I think, and tell me what you think of this, I think she's going to go after expanding Medicaid. And I mean, a lot of Republicans seem to be on board with that. It could be politically unpopular. It could have been used as a campaign issue. We didn't talk about any of that stuff. But here we are, and I think this is an opening for her, because this is the same thing that happened in 2018 after she won that election, after she won that primary in sort of a similar fashion. We didn't talk at all about gas tax or rebuild Alabama, and then all of a sudden you open up 2019, and it's the very first thing on the docket.
Right. It was the first action that they did. And I think it's interesting you bring up Medicaid. I think that's an interesting point. And it'll be interesting to see how it plays in with whatever happens with Roe versus Wade, if that's overturned, because a lot of, you know, very conservative states, Texas has one of the strongest abortion laws in the country. They're talking about expanding Medicaid so that, you know, mothers can stay on it longer. I think they've already expanded to 6 months of Medicaid for, mothers, with young children. They're talking about expanding to a year. So, you know, as we undo the current abortion laws, does that kind of open up the door for further expansion of Medicaid. And I think it could. And you know, once you open up that door for these mothers with unexpected pregnancies or, you know, whatever the situation may be, then does that ease into transitioning to a further Medicaid expansion? I think that's certainly possible. So it'll be interesting to see if that's one of the ideas that comes up here in the next few months or early next year.
Well, and this, it may be a little difficult for her. I'm not convinced the legislature wants to see control of that much money, right? So it could be a little more interesting. But anyway, back to the more general topic of KIV, we have seen the growth of KIV's power, expansion of the executive branch, unlike anything we've seen probably going back all the way back to George Wallace. And people typically not comfortable with a heavy-handed executive branch, but everything she's done, every approach, at least the big ticket things, right? The prison plan that fell apart was going to be a go it alone. Screw the legislature. We don't need to deal with a herd of turtles. We're going to get this done on our own, and that backfired on her. I think the I-10 bridge with the tolls was also kind of a go it alone her solution, but COVID-19 not really open to what the other states, what Florida and Georgia had been doing by opening up early. She wanted to just kind of wait and see, and didn't get any. You didn't consult with the Alabama legislature at all on any of that. It seems to me that the executive power is just, the executive branch is just poised to grow even more over the next 4 years under Ivy.
I think you're exactly right. Unless we see a real change within the legislature, which, you know, there's going to be some leadership turnover, obviously, but really from 2020 on, especially when COVID started hitting, she had full power to do whatever she wanted to do. She basically seized control of from the legislature of all of the first batch of stimulus money, you know, $1.8 billion that, ultimately she and her people decided how to spend that. The legislature that they've had opportunities to give themselves more power. We advocated for them being able to call themselves into special session without having to wait for a call from the governor. We've talked about limiting the power of the state health officer because really, the state health officer was driving a lot of those shutdowns during those early months of COVID and, you know, has the power to do so under Alabama law, which is really unique. She was just sort of blessing that power. But, you know, ultimately, a lot of the blame has fell on her shoulders. So I think you're exactly right. There's going to be this continued expansion of power unless somebody really steps up and tries to do something about it. And as we saw last week, there is going to be turnover in the legislature. There's, I think, 7 incumbents have now been defeated in their primary when you include Tom Watley that came through yesterday. There's several more in runoffs. There were 24 or so that didn't run for reelection. So if you get some new blood in the legislature and they're, you know, I guess stronger in their principles than this class of legislators proved to be, then maybe there's a chance to challenge her power. But if it's just a continuation of the last 4 years and they all kind of go along, then we're just going to see more of the same.
Well, I think perhaps a textbook example of this phenomenon was that 2020 session, and you remember the CARES Act money, right? And the politics of the time, Ivy leaked it to the media that the legislature wanted to build themselves a new state house, and it was called like a Taj Mahal state house or whatever. And it was some offhanded, goofy comment made by Del Marsh at the time, and he had to own it. But the way they cowered was remarkable. They just an executive amendment on the last day of the session there and just ceded complete control of that CARES Act money to the governor, it seemed. Maybe there was something behind the scenes where they kind of hammered out an agreement, but it was clear to me that this wasn't done in a traditional sort of process with committees and going through that day. They said, we will create our own extra governmental panel with the leadership and with the governor, and they will make a decision on this money. And that, to me, is just that showed you the power of the executive branch right there.
No, you're right. They had a budget agreement basically in place that determined how to spend this money. It was scaled down a little bit from that initial version that was leaked where they were going to do things like build a new state house. But it would have given much more control to the legislature. And, you know, the appearance to me is that she didn't like that plan. said, you know, I'm going to veto your budget unless you agree to basically put it in these pots and let me control it. And again, everybody just went along with it. And then they didn't come back into session, you know, until the next February, which at a time when so many people were struggling is you know, that's a separate issue from Kay Ivey, but that was amazing too. And with that money, you know, they waited months and months to spend it. None of that money was really spent until late in the summer. By that point, a lot of people were back to work. The unemployment rate was going back down to close to where it was before the pandemic. And, you know, it just, they really missed an opportunity there to help people by giving that control to her, because she basically sat on the money for 4, 5, 6 months and then doled it out through grants and that kind of thing. That really didn't help most people in Alabama. Sure, it helped some people, I guess, in small ways, but most of it went back into state government and has helped continue to feed this beast. And like I said, we're growing faster than New York or California over the last 3 years. And I don't think that's what most people in Alabama expect or want from their state government in a state that claims to be one of the most conservative in the country and a legislature that proclaimed itself as, you know, maybe the most conservative legislature ever when they were elected in 2018.
Well, and this may be more of a political question, but you watched the Alabama legislature. Under Mac McCutcheon, Speaker, he was very deferential to the Ivey administration. He seemed to give Governor Ivey whatever she wanted. They had some kind of deal. It was clear. They had some kind of agreement behind the scenes, and the House always went with the governor. The Senate would generally go along with it, but it had its own agenda. You could tell that the Senate wasn't all, even under Greg Reed, wasn't always on board with what McCutcheon and Ivey wanted to do. So that begs the question. I think Nathaniel Ledbetter's probably the odds-on favorite to be the next speaker. I mean, I guess Klaus made it close last time when he ran against McCutcheon. Maybe he can make it close again. But either one of those two guys, I think, are going to be maybe not as deferential to Kay Ivey, but they're going to be pretty close, wouldn't you think?
Yeah, I think you're right. I think they'll kind of continue that same legacy, maybe not as much as McCutcheon did, but yeah, you're going to see that. They're going to remain aligned with her. And you know, Will Ainsworth, the lieutenant governor, who's technically president of the Senate, he aligned himself pretty closely with her over the last year or two, which was interesting after some tensions, you know, back in 2020. But he seems to be all on board with her now. So if she wants to get some of these major things done, like gambling, I think they're certainly going to give her the opportunity to do so. But, you know, are the citizens of Alabama really winning from that? And, you know, my argument would be no, but she does have a mandate. So that's where we are.
She has a mandate, but she's never if it's a referendum on her tenure as governor, gambling hasn't really come up. And this is kind of a strange thing with Governor Ivey. She's never really had a legislative agenda with the exception of Rebuild Alabama in 2019. I mean, this never came up on the campaign trail. Governor, what would your legislative agenda be? No one ever talked about that.
And that was something I questioned. You know, why we had Tim James and Lindy Blanchard were obviously her two biggest rivals for the nomination. You know, why aren't they continuing to point out that we're 52nd in math? You know, and I guess they mentioned it in a commercial or something, but part of it is she never really gave anyone a chance to challenge her because she didn't go to debates or any of these public forums. But she hasn't answered that. And she hasn't answered, you know, how her agenda on education is going to improve our scores from last in the country, or, you know, how we're going to do things at this time when we have more revenue than ever and we're spending more money than ever. Well, how are we going to find ways to take less from Alabama citizens? And I think those are the questions that really needed to be asked, you know, a month ago or several months ago, but no one has really challenged her, and she's been continued to allow to do whatever she wants to do.
Well, I tell you what's interesting about that. Whenever we start talking about tax cuts or anything of that nature, and I've talked to some members kind of behind the scenes, they'll tell me stuff on background, like, look, whenever I bring up a tax cut, all of these interests, all the bureaucracy, all the teachers union, etc., they lose it. They absolutely lose it because they see that revenue as, you know, a pipeline to whatever they're trying to fund. And it's remarkable. It's not necessarily the legislature itself and government wanting to spend the money in a Republican-dominated state government. It's these special interests that want they want to feed from the trough, and they are aware enough of the budgets and the process that they push back against tax cuts, and that keeps a lot of these things from happening.
Yeah, I mean, we saw it this year. There was a supplemental appropriation bill for 2022 for education, $1.3 billion, like really almost all of the education trust fund surplus. Half of that money is going into more projects. So these schools can, you know, build a new gym or you know, buy new computers. And not to say that none of that's important, but, you know, again, we had a historic opportunity to take less taxes from Alabama citizens, and you really didn't even see a proposal to do so. Alabama Policy Institute's been pushing to repeal the grocery tax for years, and there were several bills introduced this year to do that, and they didn't even make it to a committee hearing because, no one down there seems committed enough to actually make it happen. And again, that's something that could really benefit all Alabamians right away. Anybody who's been to the grocery store lately, you know, you've had sticker shock, I'm sure. And in a small part, this could help that. But we're not having these discussions. Again, on the gas tax, when she was asked about just suspending it temporarily, she basically said, absolutely not. We've already got projects underway. We're not going to do that. And no one's challenging her on it.
Yeah, they're not. They're almost scared to. Hey, Justin, we got to get to a break here. But real quick, folks want to find you online, or they want to check out what the Alabama Policy Institute's up to. Tell where they can look.
Yeah, they can go to alabamapolicy.org. We'll post reports and news articles there. And then, yeah, several of us are writing for 1819 News fairly regularly. So they can go check out our columns there and see what's going on with the state. We're trying to keep up and hold people accountable. So that's a great place to look.
Justin, we appreciate your time. We'll talk again soon.
Thank you.
All right, guys, we got to get a break in here. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Poole Show on FM Talk 106.5.